copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Welcome to our first talk, Starting a New Venture. My name is Jeremy Peckham. I'm a serial entrepreneur involved both in business and also in mission. And what I want to share with you in the next 20 minutes is some practical and also some spiritual insights that I've gained over 20, 25 years in leadership and in starting new ventures, both business and also mission ventures. So this is not an extensive course, it's just dipping in with some highlights over the 20 minutes, which I hope will be helpful to you. If you could hold your questions until I'm done, and I will try very hard to keep to the 20 minutes, then we've got about 15 minutes to have some discussion and some interaction. I'm going to start with some spiritual aspects of starting a new venture. And the first of those really is we need to ask ourselves the question, why do I want to start a new venture? That might seem a little bit obvious at first, but I think it's extremely important for us to be really sure why it is that we want to start a new organization, why we want to start a new venture. And I would say to you that as Christians, if we're starting any venture, whether it be a business venture or whether it be a venture, Christian mission, any organization, we need to ask ourselves this question: why am I doing it? Am I doing it actually because I want to advance my career or I think it's a good thing to do? Are we doing it actually because we want to build ourselves up? We call it self-aggrandizement, if you like. We want to be seen as somebody who's doing something, who's done something, who's leading something. What I would say is that we need to be really sure if we're going to start a new venture that we're starting it because God is calling us to do that venture. That is very important, not in just starting the venture, but in maintaining us when we find there are difficulties. And you might not like to hear me say this, but I speak now from many years' experience. Organizations do not just go like that. And excited though you may be about some new enterprise or some new venture, some new evangelistic activity or mission that you want to engage in, yes, God is with us in that, but God often tests us too. And we need to remember as believers that we live in a fallen world. So that means that not everything, even if it's God's work that we're engaged in, is just going to go smoothly with no problems at all. So our sense of calling, I have found, is absolutely vital at times like that. I'm involved in a mission I'll refer to a few times this afternoon called Africa Rural Trainers. We train rural pastors in Kenya. We train them in the Bible over 3 years, and we also help them with farming. We have known since 2008, 2009, when we started that work, a number of significant setbacks and pressures, sometimes to the point of saying, why are we here? What are we doing this for? It's too difficult. It's too painful. And every time I come back to why am I here? Because God has called me here. I can do no other than be here because God has called me. When that sense of calling goes, then it's time to think about, well, do I retire? Do I move on to something else? So a sense of calling, I think, is absolutely vital for us. We need also to avoid this sacred-secular divide that somehow it's only Christians in full-time Christian service who have a calling into that ministry. Even if you're thinking about a business venture, is God laying that on your heart? Is that something that he wants you to do? Because whether we're in what we call full-time Christian service, I hate that expression, or whether we're in business, actually we're all in full-time Christian mission. If you're in business, your mission field is your co-workers, your clients, your shareholders, whoever you might have around you, and that is your mission field. We need to be sure about our calling to do that. Okay, so being certain about our calling, I would say, is a very key starting issue for us. I think another question that we can only deal with briefly this afternoon is to ask ourselves the question, you may have a bright idea, a wonderful idea, but are you the right person to start that venture, that organization, and to lead it going forward? Some of the questions that we need to ask ourselves are we a leader or are we a manager? Managers are people who manage people, processes, things, and they can be very good at doing that. But they're not always leaders. Leaders, on the other hand, are people who are able to inspire, able to motivate. There are people who come up with ideas. And they're people who have a big picture. And putting it simply, they're people whom others will follow. So in making that distinction, managers may not be leaders, but I would suggest to you again from my experience that all leaders need also to be managers. Now, we may not be perfect managers, but a lot of the activity of management surrounds skills that we can learn. And so if you are a leader and you're starting out on a new venture, you need to be thinking about what skills can I acquire that will help me to be a better leader. But you cannot necessarily be just made into a leader by going on some MBA course. There are certain traits and characteristics of us as individuals that dispose us towards leadership versus maybe management. So you may be an inspirational leader, but actually lacking in understanding accounting or what the numbers mean. You may not be so good at team management, but there are things that we can do to learn about that process as leaders. So that's a little bit of background to some of the things that we need to think about spiritually, about ourselves. Are we the right person? What are our characteristics? Let's move on now to think a little bit about some of the practical foundations that we need to lay in starting a new venture. This diagram that you have on the screen shows you five steps that are involved in setting up a new venture. I have not got time today to cover all of those, or even some of them in any great depth. This is a slide from a much longer course which I teach. But what I want to do is to just focus on one or two of these aspects. Firstly, the ideas generation stage, what I've called the conception of the new venture, the new organization, and also focus a bit on developing a plan. That's the planning phase. And then say just a few words on the execution, the last stage, executing the plan. So let's begin by thinking about the ideas creation, the first step in setting up a new venture. Why would you want to set up a new venture? Well, if you're here and you're thinking about setting up a new venture, it usually means that you've got some ideas. You've spotted an opportunity. And one of the things that often distinguishes leaders from entrepreneurial leaders is the entrepreneur is always looking around and absorbing the world around them and is one who is spotting opportunities, seeing problems and thinking out solutions. If you're that sort of person, that's how you tick, then you are probably an entrepreneur or an entrepreneurial leader. But it's not sufficient just to have an idea. We need to be able to think through that idea and to articulate it in terms of a vision. Now, some Christians have problems with the notion of a vision and think, well, that's very much a business thing, isn't it? We don't have visions in the church. A vision really is no more than having an idea that expresses itself in something out on the horizon that you want to try to achieve. It might be reaching the millennium generation. That's a huge goal. That might be your passion and your vision. And a vision usually needs to be something which is fairly far-reaching. And then the whole point of having a vision is that it gives you something that you're aiming at. If you've just got some vague feelings about some area of ministry, but you don't really know what it is that you want to be able to do, then I would suggest that that idea needs an awful lot more development to the point where you can articulate it in a very simple few words. So how do we develop that, that idea? What we basically need to do is to iterate around on the idea and to refine it, to research it a little bit more. And one of the things that we need to do in that process is what I call due diligence, that is doing the research. Too many people come up with a great idea that is really, might be as big as reaching the millennium generation, but it's not thought through in terms of what do we actually mean by that? What does that look like? What am I going to do tomorrow about achieving that that vision, that idea that I've actually got? And some of the things that we need to do, well, actually all of the things we need to do in the due diligence process is to ask questions. Due diligence is about questions, questions, questions. And I've just put a few down here, why, who, how sort of questions. Why is the venture needed? You might think it's needed, but what others think? You may have spotted a gap in ministry in your country or somewhere else. Why do you think that idea, that venture is actually needed? Do others agree with you? And when you've opened it up, do they say, ah, yeah, I can see, yeah, I agree with that. So that is actually confirming that your idea is a good idea. We need to ask ourselves the question, who else is doing it? Is there somebody else actually already working in that space? That might mean that the venture isn't needed, or that you need to partner with that other person or organization, or maybe what they're doing is not actually quite aligned with what it is that you have in mind. Defining who it is that we're reaching, the demographics, the people. Do we understand actually enough about the people group that we may be trying to reach in our ministry? What are their characteristics? We in Africa Rural Trainers are reaching rural pastors. These are people who already are pastors. Understanding their context is extremely vital. For example, they're poor. They usually have, you know, 4 to 5 kids. They have a small plot of land, and they need to maintain that land in order to survive. Their church can't support them financially. All of the presuppositions that we might have as Europeans will just fall apart when you actually go and do the due diligence and understand the context in which you want to do, for example, Bible training of pastors in rural Africa. All of those things need to be understood to shape the vision. Just very quickly, there are other ways of thinking about new ideas and innovation in ministry. Three pillars of innovation, I call them. That's the desirability, feasibility and viability. But developing the idea and the vision is, I would suggest to you, a creative process. It's not a one-off process. It's something that we need to refine over time. And actually, this is something that even when you started an organization, we need to get into doing. So let me just show you very briefly what a vision statement might look like. This is Africa Rural China's vision statement. Our vision is to impact African nations from within by equipping rural pastors and their wives with accurate knowledge of the Bible and understanding of how to interpret it and practical life skills. Supplementary to that, which is important to the way we see training, is crucial to our program, is mentoring and character development. Why? Because we're training, we're developing people who already are leaders in their community. So that's what a vision might look like. That's an example from the work that we're involved in. The next thing that we have to do, step two, I'm going to move over this quite rapidly, is develop the strategic plan. So it's one thing to have an idea, but unless you know the steps to get you from where you are now to that idea will never happen. You'll never reach your goals. So the strategic plan is something that usually starts at a fairly long reach. We've just done a new strategic plan for Africa Rural Trainers, and it's called Vision 2030. That's a 15-year strategic plan. And once you've sort of set some pegs in the ground as to what it is that you want to try to achieve, for example, which countries you want to be working in, you then need to move to a much, much smaller scale, and that is the one-year operational plan. The one-year operational plan now says, okay, how do we get to the goals of our first year of this 15-year strategic plan? And that one-year operational plan will work down to the level of you being able to say, okay, so what am I going to do tomorrow? What am I going to do next month? So that's the strategic plan. Just to wrap up with the last phase of that five-step process, once we've got our venture off the ground, execution is extremely important, and many ventures can fail because of poor execution. And we need to get involved in a regular evaluation process of the organization and how it's going, how we're measuring up against our strategic plan. A strategic plan is not something that is cast in concrete. We need to learn from experience. We need to modify that plan in the light of experience. And we do that through the planning, the doing, and the checking, and the acting on those checks cycle, as I've shown in this diagram. So that's the whole process of execution. What might that look like? Let me end up here in this talk by just showing you what that process looked like in Africa Rural Trainers. We basically have been evaluating as we've gone along. We have a three-year cycle pretty much for training pastors. And the two objectives that we started out with is teaching rural pastors the Bible to transform their lives from a position of being only having rudimentary knowledge of the Bible to really understanding how to handle God's word. That was one main goal. The second was to lift them economically by helping them to improve their farming. Well, what we found was that incredible progress in terms of transformation. I've listed six major areas of transformation that we found in the lives of the pastors. If you're interested, go to our website. There's some videos, documentary on there, which I find very inspiring. But the sustainability side of what we wanted to do, we haven't yet achieved. In fact, we've had some major disasters. We lost about $150,000 in a 40-acre farm that got destroyed by a hailstone. We had the crops insured, so few insurance company refused to pay up. So these are the times when you think, God, what are you doing? What's all this about? And shall we just give up? No, God has called us to do this work. And then we think, well, what has God been doing? He's actually been transforming the lives of these pastors spiritually. So what do we do about the areas of failure? Well, we're working on another model of how we help and equip these rural pastors. I need to stop there and we can go into questions. The first question is really about how do you go about raising funds for a Christian venture? Good question. I don't know whether that's something that's on all of your minds. With Africa Rural Trainers, we were in a fortunate position, and I have a private charitable foundation. Because I've been in business, I gifted a lot of shares into that foundation. That's what funds the work. But here's the thing. God has laid on our hearts now the vision to reach and train 30,000 pastors by 2030. Okay, we've got 123 graduated in 2013. 250 are now in training. They'll finish next year. But God is laying on our hearts to go to other countries. So we are facing the very question that you are raising, because our fund is not going to be big enough. So how do you raise funds for something like this? Well, there are several directions that you could go, churches, individuals, foundations. Typically, foundations tend to like projects, short-term things, which they help you get off the ground, but then they want to be able to see how are you going to sustain the work that you're interested in. My personal passion, and I'll share a little bit about this aspect of fundraising, is very much sustainability. I think too much mission around the world these days relies upon donations. And the problem is that if you get any Christian news magazine, you open it up and out drops a whole pile of leaflets. Maybe you signed up for something somewhere, somewhen, and you get stuff coming through the door. There's just so many things going on. If you look at the growth of mission over the last 200 years, it's absolutely incredible. And I think people are getting saturated with so many good causes. It's not that they're not good causes, but you can't do everything. So I think that we need to think more and more about how we build sustainability. We may need to raise initial funds, but we need to think creatively about how do we keep that mission, that organization going. In some cases, it may be that people pay for training. Our rural pastors, we don't charge them because they're poor. They wouldn't get trained if we charged them. And that's one of the reasons they don't go to seminary, because there's no way they can afford to go to a residential college. So, but there may be some ministries, some ventures where you're writing or you're selling something or you're getting people to subscribe to information that you're providing, resources that you're providing. Think carefully about how you can do something that will give you an income stream, a revenue stream. In our case, in Africa, it's a little bit more obvious how we might be able to build sustainability in. Why? Well, because the people that we're trying to help, we need to help both economically and spiritually. And the model that we're currently working on is the idea of getting these pastors together in a collective, it's called, or a self-help group. So typically 35 to 50 pastors in a training center. And we will actually put capital into that collective to help them buy things that they need to improve their farming, but collectively. And we will, it'll be an interest-free loan. They pay back the loan out of the profits from the farming activity, plus a profit share. Now, that might be a little bit unusual, because many ministries, mission activities don't have that opportunity of saying, well, look, we're going to give you this for free, and we want to help you with something practically. When we've done that, you need to then start paying us, if you like, for the training that you've received. But do you see the sort of idea that I'm sketching out there? And that's actually what being an entrepreneurial leader is about, is just thinking out of the box, to use the horrible expression, thinking of creative ways of building in some sustainability into the venture. But all of the other, it would just take too long to go into detail about the other strands of how you do fundraising. Could we, because time is short, could we just ask if somebody else has got a question, and then we'll come back to you for your second one? Very good question. So if I've understood it correctly, how do you decide whether to change something from within, if you like, or to just start something new? Because what's happening in this organisation isn't maybe going in the right direction. I think, speaking from experience here, it's usually a combination of passion and frustration. What do I mean by that? You will find that many new ventures get started because some entrepreneurial leader within a bigger organization does not have the freedom, or is not given the freedom, to innovate. And usually in business, in the organization I used to work for, called Logica, a big software house, they actually had a very vibrant culture of people not being able to do what they wanted to do, and so spinning something out. And that's actually what I did. I did a management buyout. And that's usually because it's not appropriate for that organization to do what you want to do in the new venture. In my case, it was to develop a product company. I was in a services company, so it didn't fit. So I actually did the management buyout. They let me go. In Christian ministry, I think what we should be striving for is, if you are going to start up something new outside, to do it in harmony, not out of, frustration that I've got to leave, and then, there's the pain of people feeling that you've left because that you don't like them anymore. So first thing is to see whether you've got a culture in the organization of innovation, and of allowing you maybe to start up some new ministry within your organization, and to just be allowed to just go run with it, maybe with some help, with some backup. But if you're in a culture that just does not change, and actually what you can see is this organization, to be honest, is dying in terms of the way it's reaching its marketplace of people, and you think that we need to be changing direction, you may find that you do have to start a new venture. That's a very brief answer to that that question. Any other questions? Yes, at the front. How big should the team be when you're developing the idea and developing the vision? A good question. I didn't cover it, unfortunately, but I've got several slides on this that expand that out. You do need to work together with others. It's not a good idea to work in isolation. So if you're developing the idea, first thing you need to do is go and ask friends, family, church members, what do they think? And then if you're starting to get some sort of positive feedback that the idea seems interesting or good, you probably then need to draw a small team of probably no more than half a dozen people. Otherwise, you then have a vision designed by committee, and that is really not what you want. What you really want is the number of people around you, which is usually small, who can stimulate and contribute to the shaping of that vision. And that might be people that you trust who will be able to challenge you. Say, well, what about this? What about that? How are you going to pay for it? So, we need to think about that. So find that small group of people with whom you can share the initial idea, and then help you to develop it and sketch it out on the whiteboard, and then think over it, pray over it, come back to it, refine it. This is something that takes time. It's not going to happen overnight. In Kenya, when we first got the idea of Africa Rural Trainers, it was at the time of the post-election violence. And we discovered, to our shock, Christians from different tribes actually fighting, killing each other, burning each other's houses. And we're thinking, Christians don't do that, do they? And we discovered, yes, actually they do. Why? Because they have no real concept of what the Bible teaches. So when there's a tribal conflict, as it happened because one guy got in and the other tribe's guy didn't get in, they default to culture, which is to do what their tribal leader says to do rather than what the Bible says. Basically, we did a six-month research project to find out what the real needs of these pastors were. So we actually employed somebody for 6 months to go around different parts of Kenya and ask all sorts of questions. So that took us 6 months. So we got an initial idea, but we said, look, we need to understand this much better. Who's already doing it? What are their needs? How do we need to achieve this goal of transforming these guys so they're not killing each other, put it bluntly? Is that helpful? It's as long as it takes. And I think it was about a year before we actually started the from the first idea of when we heard the story of the violence through to actually starting the organisation. It's possibly a minimum, really. It just depends on the resources that you have available, the people that you have available around you to help you and develop that vision. Don't get sort of locked into the time. You need to do what you need to do. So the steps that I was sketching out there, you just need to go through them. And however long it takes is however long it takes. Sometimes it's faster, sometimes it's slower. So how do you go about assessing the risk and when is the right time to take the leap of faith? One of the things that entrepreneurs do, and this is very well researched, is take risks. Some leaders don't like risk at all. They're very good leaders, but they're not entrepreneurs because they don't take risk. So if you are very risk-averse, you're probably not an entrepreneurial leader. So just honestly ask yourself that question. If you're scared stiff of stepping out, then you're probably not the right person to actually do that. When is the right time to do it? It's a very difficult question to answer. It depends what it is that you're trying to do. If the needs are urgent, in Kenya the needs were just, they're urgent. They're not going to go away. And tribal conflict's not going to go away, so we need to get on with it. How do we go about assessing the risk? Well, you need to go. If you go through this evaluation process and do the due diligence, what happens is that you begin to see what are the obstacles, what are the things that might stop you doing this, what are the risks of failure. Now, one of the things that we intentionally did, and I guess it comes from my experience of being a business entrepreneur, is that I said, look, we're not going to set up a big organization and just sort of chuck money and go and train rural pastors. We said one of the risks here is that these rural pastors, if we offer training, will come up all excited on the first day and then drift off and not commit to this three-year training program. All sorts of problems might arise that we hadn't foreseen. So we said, we're going to do a pilot project, a long pilot project for 3 years. So we said, we're going to take three centres because we wanted to have enough centres to be able to not just, oh, that was one that failed, and see what happened. Well, what happened is that we started with three centres. One we had to close down within a few months. Why? Because the guys didn't commit. So we went and opened another one, and the guys were really committed. End of the 3 years, we had three centres with full commitment from very few dropouts. The point of that is that you need to think about what the risks might be in this venture and then maybe test it out and then see whether your assumptions are correct or not. So I would say don't rush in. Maybe great ideas that you have, But plan, go at it carefully. Remember Nehemiah from the plenaries that we were having. What did he do? He did his due diligence. He went around and surveyed the walls. So he was assessing all sorts of things in that process. We've probably got to stop there, haven't we?